It's fun to be inquisitive. Be nosy. Stick to your passion. Find out more for yourself. Quest is fun. Join me, Tristan Pang, on a journey of inspiration. Welcome to Youth Voices.
Hello everyone, welcome to my show. This is your host Tristan Pang on Planet FM 104.6, Youth Voices. Great to have your company here today. So many people tell me that maths is hard and that there are not many female students who choose maths as a career. There are indeed a lot more male mathematicians out there, but in the recent years, the number of female mathematicians have been increasing. So today I'm going to tell you about the very first woman who obtained a first-class honours degree in mathematics. She was Dame Mary Lucy Cartwright, a British mathematician born in 1900 and passed in 1998 in Cambridge. Cartwright was one of the pioneers of what would later become known as chaos theory. Along with the super well-known mathematician Littlewood, Cartwright saw many solutions to a problem, which would later be seen as an example of the butterfly effect. In chaos theory, the butterfly effect is the sensitive dependence of initial conditions in which a small change in one state of a deterministic nonlinear system can result in large differences in a later state. I have a fantastic book which I brought about almost 10 years ago. It's called Fascinating Mathematical People by Donald J. Elbers and Gerald L. Alexanderson. It is a very good book which interviewed some very inspiring mathematicians. One of the interviews was with Dame Mary Lucy Cartwright, which was conducted in person and correspondent through the periods of 1990 and 1994. It was a great interview, and I have picked some of it to share with you today. But first of all, let me tell you a bit more about Dame Mary Lucy Cartwright. Cartwright was born in December 17, 1900. She matriculated at St. Hugh's, Oxford, and was awarded a DPhil from Oxford in 1930. By the way, matriculation means a formal process of entering a university with a formal ceremony. I was matriculated here in Oxford last October, and also DPhil, which is spelled D-P-H-I-L, is a fancy word for PhD here at Oxford. Anyways, Cartwright's supervisors were G.H. Hardy and E.C. Titchmarsh, both world-famous mathematicians. During her career, she made important contributions to the theory of functions and differential equations, and she is particularly well known for work with Littlewood on van der Poel's equations. Cartwright was elected a Fellow of the Royal Society of London in 1947 and received the Sylvester Medal of the Royal Society and a De Morgan Medal from the London Mathematical Society. Cartwright served as president of the London Mathematical Society and the Mathematical Association in England. She received honorary degrees from the universities of Edinburgh, Leeds, Hull, Wales, Oxford and Cambridge and became a Dame of the British Empire in 1969. She was Director of Studies in Mathematics and the Mistress of Girton College and Reader in the Theory of Functions at Cambridge University. So the interview just started off by asking Cartwright how she first met G.H. Hardy. And Cartwright replied, "Near the end of my third year at Oxford, one of the most important events in my mathematical careers occurred at their party on a barge in 8 weeks, the main annual rowing event held at Oxford in May. The men's college had barges on the Thames that their rowing men used for changing. When the races took place, there were parties on the roof of the barges. Mildred Cousins had asked me to go with her to a party. The chaperone rules were very restrictive, and we avoided having to ask permission if possible. So I think it was probably okay for such a party if there were two women and two men. One of the Mildred's friends had asked V.C. Morton, later professor of mathematics, to the party. At one point during the evening, Morton advised me, if I was serious about mathematics, to read Whittaker and Wurtzen's Modern Analysis and to attend Professor Hardy's class, which took place once a week over the Holywell Gate of New College Friday evenings. I owe my career to Morton. I read Modern Analysis during the following long vacation and got special permission to attend Hardy's classes. Hardy's class consisted of a talk about an hour's always beginning 15 minutes late. Afterwards, we had tea and biscuits and talked about mathematicians and mathematics. Apparently, I impressed him very favourably, for he was a final examiner when I got the first. One paper was so hard that no one seemed able to do more than 20 minutes of work on it. Hardy took immense trouble with the students, whether they were good, bad or indifferent. Once, when I had produced an obviously wrong result, Hardy said, 'Let's see, there's always hope when you get a sharp contradiction.' Hardy's manners were peculiar. If he walked along a street, he looked at the ground, only looking up occasionally. I think that if he saw someone he knew, he would deliberately look the other way. The second question asks, would you describe what it was like to be a student of G.H. Hardy? Cartwright said that from 1920 to 1931, Hardy was outstanding influence in pure mathematics at Oxford. I felt that I had joined a rather very special group when I began to attend Hardy's classes at New College in January 1928. He had just ceased to be secretary and was beginning his term as the president of the London Math Society, and was obviously strained and working very hard. Looking back, I think we knew that we were studying under a very great man who had not been recognised fully. The members of the class included Stanley, who had finished the courses and was a lecturer at Manchester, and Evelyn, a direct descendant of the famous Stirist. The next question was, Hardy was in the US while you were working on your thesis. Did that cause any problems? Cartwright said that from October 1928 to May 1929, Hardy exchanged jobs with Veblen of Princeton, a geometer. Tickermarsh was put in charge of me, and his suggestion suited me well. Tickermarsh had a job at the University College, London, and also a research fellowship at Magdalen College, Oxford. We used to meet in his room in Trinity. He was a wealthy man with an estate in Northumberland. Tea was served on a silver tray from a silver teapot. Hardy returned from the US in May 1929. I thought he looked very much better and quite relaxed, but his hair had turned white. After his return, I completed my DPhil. I successfully applied for a Yarrow Research Fellowship at Girton College, Cambridge. It was said that the degrees of PhD and DPhil at Oxford were only created about 1920 for Americans. In the early 1920s, men were interested in a research position at Oxford were told to be content with the traditional BSc and not to go for a DPhil. In Cambridge and elsewhere, jobs depended entirely on research and personal recommendations. The numbers involved were so small that everyone had personal contacts if they were any good at all. And this was true until the Second World War. Very few people were graduate students at the universities outside Oxford and Cambridge, and perhaps two or three of the London colleges. Edinburgh developed a graduate school of modest kind among its junior lecturers, most of whom had no previous research experience. At Cambridge, a graduate scholarship would enable good mathematicians to write a dissertation which he could submit for a prize fellowship at his college. For example, at Trinity, to the best of my knowledge, there were no restrictions of duties, and the fellowship could be held for 4 years, after which the man's prospects for a college lectureship were good if his research work was good. I regret to say that my impression when I began research was that, in general, less qualified men were tolerated and employed quite a lot in the University of Cambridge, which eliminated some quite good women from Cambridge. Another question was, you collaborated with Littlewood on several papers. Describe what it was like to work with Littlewood. Well, I first met Littlewood in June of 1930 when he came to Oxford to examine me for my Doctor of Philosophy degree. Later at Cambridge, I attended a series of courses he offered on the theory of functions. Our work began with a request in January 1939 from the Department of Scientific and Industrial Research for help in solving certain very objectionable-looking differential equations occurring in connection with radar. At the time, I had been in the habit of showing Littlewood anything I thought would be of interest to him. I read a summary by Van der Poel of work up to 1932 and studied the reference books to the works of Edward Appleton and Van der Poel in 1920. I told Littlewood of some of the nonlinear problems which seemed to arise. We translated problems which were suggested by radio waves and oscillations into dynamical problems. He solved or half-solved several of the problems, and suggested methods to handle the other problems. There was an odd phenomenon occurring with an odd nonlinear function mentioned in a short letter to Nature, where Van der Poel suggested that it occurred with a similar even nonlinear function. That was the only case that really interested Littlewood. He gave me the impression that this was an exciting problem, and that he would be interested in any significant progress I could make towards a solution. Meanwhile, in one of Edward Collingwood's classes, I had learned of distortion theorem. While taking a bath one night, I saw how to apply it and Montel's normal families to the problem. When I later settled down to examine the problem more carefully, I fell into the usual trap. The proof for the case P equals 1 was known, and I tried to prove the case for P greater than 1 using a minor modification of the proof rather than my original idea. I sent this attempt to Littlewood, and in reply I received a note with a sketch of a snake signifying that there was an obvious error in my proof. Returning to my original idea, I sent a nail proof to Littlewood. Sometime later, while punting with the vice mistress of Girton on the River Cam near Trinity College, I spotted Littlewood on a nearby bank. As I had received no reply regarding my revised proof, I asked him if he had read my manuscript. He said, "Have I got to read all of that?" I convinced him that he should, and when he had, he was favourably impressed with my work. We collaborated in proving all solutions bounded, without which all other work was invalid. After a few years, I got fed up with the changes, and we separated. I left it to him to complete the proofs of the most difficult problems, and I picked up other bits and pieces. So then, how did your collaboration with Littlewood compare to that of Hardy and Littlewood? And Carterwood said that my collaborations with Littlewood was unlike his with Hardy in one respect. He would not let me put his name to any paper not actually written by him. I had to say it was based on joint work with him. There was one exception, a fixed point theorem on which he gave way on condition that it was checked by someone acceptable to him. The paper was published and later referred to in a subsequent article by Newman in his presidential address to the London Mass Society. Littlewood was always more ready to talk out of doors. He never discussed problems with me at the blackboard, but he would draw imaginary figures on a wall as we walked and talked. I ran into him, quite unexpectedly, once. As we spoke, one lens fell out of his glasses. It was in the day of clothes rationing, and the knee of his trousers were torn and mended, one by a safety pin. He apologized, adding that he had not planned to call on the lady that afternoon. Once we began to collaborate, nearly all our collaborations were done by letters, with occasional short discussions of particular points. I was occasionally able to catch him on the telephone after late tea and before his early dinner. I should mention that Littlewood suffered, so he said, from depression from 1931 until 1956. All my work with him was done during his worst years. Littlewood was a very great mathematician. He once told me, and I agree, that in true collaboration, the authors do not know who had which idea first. I believe that his work with Hardy is more important than the work done by either of them separately. I also think that he could not have achieved as much as he did if he didn't let Hardy write up the final versions of much of their joint work. And the final question, would you leave us with a bit of your philosophy? Before Littlewood and I started collaborating, except for his work on anti-aircraft fire during First World War, there seemed to be a deep divide between pure and applied maths. I'm of the opinion that the dividing line between strictly abstract reasoning and thinking in terms of real-world problems is by no means clearly defined. A number of major developments in pure maths were first thought out in terms of real-world situations. Nevertheless, various aspects of maths attract different people who are left cold by others. I've obtained immense satisfaction from doing mathematics. My method was to polish and polish, and when the work had been published, to destroy all earlier versions. Mathematics is a young person's game, mainly because major advancements in the subject come from approaching problems from a slightly different perspective than previously adopted. These types of ideas often come in the course of learning a subject for the very first time. Younger mathematicians have slightly different backgrounds, find it easier to learn new subjects, have been trained in newer methods in allied fields, and are not afraid to experiment with new techniques. It is easier for an older mathematician to let ideas and methods become fixed and to fill their time with other interests. So that's all for us today. I welcome your feedback and your support of the program, so please visit my website, www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. That's quest-is-fun.org.nz/youthvoices. Or you can email me at youthvoicesnz@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for tuning in. See you next month. Bye.
Join me again for another exciting program next month on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. or listen anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/youthvoices or listen to the archive on my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. Youth Voices.